This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everyone here in the mighty Manawatu. You're here on Manawatu's People Radio, 999 AM, the voice of your community. You are here with the Flatting Today team. I'm Cam.
And I'm Daniel.
And we are joined here, I'm going to introduce you. We are joined today in the studio with a very special guest, Kirsty.
Hello there, Cam. Hello there, Daniel. Thanks for having me back.
You're back for a third time, for a third series, for a third edition in a row.
So. Indeed. Gluttons for punishment.
Ooh. And also, you're the social work placement, so you kind of get stuck.
No escaping.
Yeah, this is what we would call in union circles slave labour, where you have to do what we tell you in order to get the marks that you need, but you don't get paid for it.
Yeah, there's a catch everywhere, isn't there? Slowly learning.
So, we are also the juror from the Manawatu Tenants Union. We deal with all things housing and living and flatting related. And renting and tenancies. So how do the team get a hold of us if they have any issues?
Yeah, always email info@mtu.org.nz or give us a phone call on 06-3577-435.
Fantastic. Right, so in the last couple of series we've talked about things such as what would happen if there was no... if there was no such thing as rent or rentals. We've also talked about what would happen if there was no such thing as landlords, so no such thing as tenants and then no such thing as landlords. Now we're going to talk about what would happen if there was no state involvement of any form in housing.
Which is decidedly less pleasant to think about, mind you.
Yes.
So the basic premise, I suppose, is the no government providing social housing, particularly. If they do happen to provide anything, it'll be at private market rates. But yes, we can just say not there at all. And it's probably easy for the discussion of the situation scenario to say community housing is also not around, because a lot of that would also need support from central government of what is there would probably be pretty small.
Okay. So if we decided today or tomorrow the government came out and said, right, that's it, we are no more state housing or any public housing of any kind, and they would have put all of their 75,000 houses on the market tomorrow, what would happen?
Well, I mean, putting that many houses on the market all at once is going to be the whole significant drop in the house price is the first instance on just having it happen. And then we'll probably have a whole heap of investors buying them up, because that's kind of what happened the last time or every other time that a national government has decided to sell off a large number of state houses. They'll often go dirt cheap and investors will get them more often than the tenants living in them. For the understandable reason, the investment has the lots of money floating around.
Yep.
And the tenant living in them doesn't.
No.
Yes. So would this, if that was to happen, would this actually displace people?
Almost certainly. Because as happened in the 1990s when the national government at the time decided that they were going to slowly get rid of income-related rents and make all of the Housing New Zealand places at market rent, it became too expensive for everyone.
Yeah.
And if all of the government housing stock goes to private investors, they are probably going to charge market rent.
They'd be able to charge what they wanted to, wouldn't they? Well,
within some limits, but yeah. And even if they did it a little less than market rent, is going to be a lot more than a quarter of everyone's income.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you can't afford the rent, you get displaced either through rent arrears and termination or just having to go find somewhere else.
Okay. So would that mean, though, in the first instance, so I'm looking at it from the point of view that if that was to happen and 75,000 homes were put on the market, those homes have people in them. So essentially, unless we get an influx of people, then we wouldn't necessarily see a drop or an increase in homeless people, because it's either going to be like they're either going to keep the existing tenant there, whether that tenant could afford it or not, it's a different story, but someone's going to still be living in that house, whether it's the person in there now or someone else renting it. So effectively all you'd be doing is changing who lives in there, but the number of people have potentially – who don't have a home wouldn't necessarily change.
Probably not straight off the bat, no.
No, but you do get the feeling it would be kind of one of those results of a little filter down effect somewhere along the way. Maybe not today or in the immediate future, but somewhere along the line, you think that would be one of the prices that folk would be paying for that?
So, funnily enough, the trickle-down approach works there but doesn't work for other things.
Mm. when it suits.
Yes, I suppose when definitely done a few submissions and things, even with the Labour government around the whole idea of trickle-down housing. It's like, it doesn't quite work in practice how you seem to be imagining it does. But just because more people are like buying a house doesn't necessarily free up another one that some renters can go into.
Yeah.
It would make sense, but, you know, population growth and change is happening at the same time as well as the ways that we live in houses. So just because one happens to be free because someone built another one doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to substantially reduce the demand on them. But anyway, to get back onto this one in particular, in the 1990s, when income-related rents were on the verge of disappearing and being entirely replaced by accommodation supplement, when people realised that they probably wouldn't be able to afford the rent, they started leaving Housing New Zealand places and then moving in with friends and family to try spread out that rent a bit more so they could survive, as well as, you know, significantly more demand on food banks and that sort of thing. So I would imagine that sort of thing would still happen. So despite everyone still having a house, they would probably redistribute to better spread those costs.
Yeah.
Because I'm not imagining the accommodation supplement or the benefit rates are likely to increase.
No.
And while a large number of additional rental homes would probably reduce the rental price somewhat. Again, I don't think it's going to be reducing it enough. No. At least not in a short to medium term.
So we wouldn't, and I wouldn't think that if we got rid of state housing and, if we got rid of state housing or housing in that context by the government, I wouldn't necessarily see the money that the government would be saving on income-related rent subsidies being given back to taxpayers directly either.
Unlikely. It would probably go back into the pocket and say, look, this is all the savings that we're making.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if it didn't, it would probably it's probably safest to assume that there wouldn't be an accommodation supplement as well, but that is ridiculously high at the moment.
Yes.
And money saved on income-related rent could end up just being funneled that way. Or like, hey, we have to re-put our emergency housing systems back in place. And, look at those budgets, blowouts again.
And I guess it would probably just, like anything we do with these changes, would disproportionately affect those who are more likely to be vulnerable. So I'm thinking people in our disabled communities, marginalised communities like Rainbow and whatever else, our seniors, definitely our pensioners who rely fundamentally on income related rent in terms of social housing, council housing,
absolutely
being 25% of their income.
Yep.
When you're on a pension, you know exactly how much rent is going to be each week.
Yep.
And you can still afford to live.
Yep. Oh, and you know, that's the thing. By definition, the people living in those sorts of housing can't compete in the private market.
No.
So if we just get rid of that entire section, these are people who still can't compete in the private market.
Yep. Yeah, that's not going to change when that happens, is it? Still not going to be able to.
And, I mean, I guess, so what would happen then if one investor or two investors brought up the entire portfolio? Was that essentially just taking it from public to private enterprise?
It would definitely shift it into private enterprise, and they would most likely charge a market rent. There wouldn't be any income-related rent subsidies anymore.
That would be interesting, because if that was the case, then, you know, would the government then put the pressure on them to pay their fair share on tax on profits too?
With the track record they've shown so far, you wouldn't be holding your breath or putting money on it, would you? But
yes, it would be nice to have a bit more of the taxation stuff as far as renting and things go, but that's something that's come up every time we've chatted about this so far.
Well, and this
is a recurring theme.
Well, this is the thing, though. It's, and I would argue that if someone just, like, if you brought 10 new investment properties, that you would be argue that you're not going to make a profit for the first 5 years. Mm. Also, because you've got all the interest and stuff that you can claim back. Yes, because I mean, Do you know what KO's operating budget is, or
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, apart from quite a lot.
Yes. Well, I mean, let's bring it up on a calculator. You know, if you times 75,000 homes by an average of $450,000 roughly per house, that's a lot of money that they have in just sheer assets.
Ah, yes. But of course, when you're looking at the government books, the amount that is embedded in an asset is not considered for their loan and ability to do anything.
Yeah,
so they can't take a loan out on all of those assets.
$33,750,000,000 in assets.
Yes,
yep. So like that. Lots. Yeah, so it just always perplexes me that, that we seem to not be able to add more houses, because there's certainly a lot of equity in the system.
Yep. There is always the possibility that if private hands held all of the housing, depending on the incentive structure, there could be more building. Because at the moment, as I suppose I've said quite a bit of other times, that very few things are being built for rent. Still very few things are being built for rent. And particularly the government, definitely right now, not really building anymore.
No.
Yes.
And it does happen in fits and starts. You know, the Labour will get in, they'll take a year or so to start putting things into place, and then they'll start a whole building
program.
And go for that. We're going to do 10,000 new houses, and we got to three.
And then
National gets in. It's like, we're going to stop building altogether and decide that this is the amount that we're going to have, and it just goes back and forth, which is not very helpful for anyone. But so I suppose it's unlikely that we would have any more stock coming in or going out with the different building. There's the argument of private investors and developers like to say that the government doing it is crowding them out, because the government gets priority, basically, and it drives up the price of construction and all that. But is the sure, the government is doing a lot.
Mm.
I'm not sure it's doing that much because, as I've mentioned before, the bottleneck is the amount of builders that we have.
Yep.
Yes, tradespeople, supplies. Hence why, of recent times, recently the government have changed the legislation to allow more things to come in, you know, like jib materials or whatever.
Freed that up, haven't they?
Freed that up. But, I mean, all those things would go away if we didn't have the state investing, right?
Mm.
So that's the thing. If you didn't have a state landlord, just look at all the money that disappears just in terms of the repairs, the maintenance, the economies that attach to it. But, you know, traditionally you would just subsidise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to, say, the wool industry was heavily subsidised for many years. But now with the change in policy that the state housing have done, they said that they're only going to use woolen carpet in all of their houses. Yep. That's inadvertently guaranteeing some sort of investment in industry without necessarily having to subsidise it.
Yep.
Indirect.
So, you know, there would actually be, I would say there would be a lot, not only the drop in the housing pricing market, which I think that's perfectly fine. We need to burst that bubble because it's just unattainable. As we've talked about in previous episodes, what's the average time to save for a house now? 15 years or something?
It's
going up.
Pretty big. I mean, it has just been continuing to go up and up and up over time.
Mm.
And it used to be, I can't remember when, probably about 50 years ago. So if you saved all of your income for 1 or 2 years, or at least most of it, that would be enough to get you a deposit.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not so much anymore.
So that's fine, because effectively that would hit the speculators, right, who are speculating on the property price going up. But actually what it would do is it would have a huge dent on all the tradespeople. There would suddenly be a lot of people going, oh, we now have got all these builders who aren't building houses or can't build houses because there's no market.
Right? True.
Because you've actually stopped the consumption effect, you know, where there's now a significant change affects those things.
And definitely in the short term, there would be fewer houses being built. I mean, in the longer term, it'll probably go back to the amount that's being built now just by different people, but it would be scattered even more because we don't have that economies of scale.
Yes. Just imagine all the people in...
And when.
All the people on the Bunnings ads, you know, sitting in Bunnings being like, oh, there's no one buying this timber. Yeah.
What do we do now?
Yep. There's only so many times you can dust the shelves, right?
There is. Yep.
So can you think of any other kind of unintended consequences of that, like, that we haven't discussed?
And there would definitely just be... very many difficulties, I suppose, because you'd be relying on the private market to do everything in housing, which means it's definitely not serving the lower incomes. And if you're relying then on speculative developments in making your new homes, you're not going to be designing them for specific groups, and peoples and communities.
No.
Because, of course, the people needing 1 and 2 bedrooms, or particularly 1 bedroom, I suppose, aren't always the ones who happen to have lots of money floating around to be able to pay higher rents or encourage their building.
Yes.
So we might see a tendency to, again, make the bigger houses and then rent room by room. So everyone gets stuck in a sort of flatting situation or in a boarding house. So smaller houses, like we're getting a bit more with Kāinga Ora at the moment, may start disappearing from the rental market largely.
And it's like you said earlier.
Because economies of scales would say that a bigger property would be better value for money.
Yeah.
Well, it is. You make all your money on basically the rooms, like bedrooms, they are cheap to make because they don't have any piping in them, basically.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many bedrooms you have, it's not going to increase the amount of you have to spend on a kitchen or a bathroom. Every house has to have a kitchen and a bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're adding, you know, 20, 50,000 for an extra bedroom, hey, three extra bedrooms, it's got a bigger footprint, but that's 150,000 that you've popped onto your house.
Yes. Yeah, no, and yes, because yes, no, it's basically a blank slate for that.
So, yes, I'd expect there to be a shift back in that direction again.
Yes, and I mean, it's also worth noting that it's also the assumption as well that everybody who is in a state house is on income-related rents. That's not always the case. Like, I know there are lots of people out there who are in a state house who are working part-time, so they're actually contributing more than...
Oh, okay, yep.
Like, they're not paying... They're paying a cheaper rent, but it's not full market rent. But it's not also not...
So they're actually paying part themselves.
Yes. I don't know how the calculation works out, but there are people that who we need to support, but are paying actual. They say less than market rent, but how they calculate it, I'm not sure.
But yes, those people also be suffering, and they're like, "Hey, you now have to pay full market rent."
Yeah,
which by definition you couldn't afford to start with. You might be close to there. And I suppose at the moment there's the unfortunate situation of carrying an order, particularly as like, hey, you can afford normal rent, so out you go, enjoy your free market.
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So would ultimately the first instance if that hit the we went down this path, how would that influence the market? Because if you're adding 75,000 homes to that were on income-related rent.
And so, and again, in the short term, it would probably mean a reduction in rents into the market. But those rents are going to be higher than the quarter income or, you know, quarter of a benefit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And basically all of the private investors and developers who happen to now own these houses, do you want to build more and make the rent go down more? Or would you like to decide, you know what, I would prefer rents to go up. We're the only ones building. How about we hold on to these things for a bit, let the pressure build up again and those rents increase, and then maybe we can look to doing some more building. And they're not quite as all acting in unison as that, but those are still the incentive structures. As a private, or if you're building for private rental, every house you build is going to, you know, cost you the money of the mortgage and rates and insurance, but decrease your income in the rents.
Yes.
So you don't want to do it until you think you're going to get a high enough rent for it.
Yeah.
Well, and that would be the other interesting thing, right? Because I'm pretty sure KO is exempt from paying rates.
Yes, but if all of those houses went into
private hands, would change.
And sure, local councils would probably get quite a bit of extra money and they wouldn't mind too much, but then they would also be losing their own housing that they provide. So, yeah.
Oh, yes, because, you know, fortunately, what you don't think about too as well as in this scenario is that our city council, Palmerston North City Council, has about 400 tenancies that they look after and manage.
Yep.
So that would be 400 households or families that would be in the similar displacement, because where would they go?
Yep,
absolutely.
And here we have MASH, who sublets some of those houses too, ones that council owns. If council doesn't own them and they go to private, then they have to go through the private market and figure different ways out that way.
Yes.
And I suppose just to go back a bit on one of the things I was saying about the whole, if everything's a private market, then the government has no way of intervening on rent apart from just here's some rent control.
Yeah.
Not that they can do a very good job at the moment because there's just not enough public housing to act as a viable competitor.
So do you have any knowledge or information on how much of a competitor to the private market our state currently is?
I think it's like... No, I can't give you a reasonable number that I would need to check first. But I think it's pretty small. It's like 5-10% maybe.
So with all the sell-offs that's happened over the last little while, they would be a relatively small percentage player in the field, wouldn't they? There's definitely a lot more privately owned
They are
properties.
Still the biggest landlord. But they are still a lot smaller than the private market.
Yeah.
But that would be a trip down census way. It's probably going to be the easiest one to figure that out.
Let me just do some quick maths.
Ah, that works too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have looked into it for Palmerston North and the wider Manawatu, but I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head.
No, I think I worked it out about 7%.
Okay, my 5-10% wasn't too far off.
Yes. Figures, yep. So, now, how I'm going to explain how I got this rough calculation. So it's very rudimentary done. The inner accountant and me quickly just did this. on a radio that I was listening to, radio article from RNZ just 2 days ago, Kat Watson, who's the head of tenancy services, said on the radio that there's around about 700,000 tenancies across the country. So I subtracted 75,000 from that, being the ones that would be in KO's control because they would have bonds and stuff lodged in that number.
Mm-hmm.
That came out, that rudimentary left you with 525,000 tenancies divided by the 75,000. Came out at 7%.
Right, yep.
Yeah. So
sounds about right.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is if you want the proportion of it, you probably need to leave that 75,000 in there, but that doesn't matter entirely.
But yeah, so, you know, so around 5-10% is actually probably hitting the point. So, I'm surprised then that there would be such a, with it being such a small competitor, as in terms of like, say that 5-10% of the housing market, that it would have such a huge effect.
Well, as always, the effect is on the people who are less able to do anything about it.
Yes.
And, yeah, rental prices will go down, but they will not go down a huge amount.
No.
Because I calculated it out the other day. Just as an exercise to in the office, that if we wanted to drop the housing market by, I think, 1.5% for Palmerston North, for the Manawatu, we would have to build about 2,500 homes a month for 6 months.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's the level of building that has to happen. Either from the private market or state in order to significantly lower the current market.
And, of course, if it's a private market, why would they want to do it to reduce all of their incomes across all of their asset base? Yes. So we kind of have to rely on an external bunch without those same profit incentives, which currently is the state.
Yeah.
It's just that.
They're not building priorities.
They're not building it for that specific thing because it's got a. It's basically the great big barrier between public and private housing.
Yes,
and unless we can get rid of that barrier and make public housing sufficiently large, it's just always going to be that way.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yes, well, that is us at our time limit. I mean, I could continue on chatting because that now created about four or five different brainwaves in my head.
but try to remember them for next time.
Yes, but we are out of time. So thank you for coming into the studio and joining us today, Kirsty. We very appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Happy to help any time.
And just before we go, Daniel, last ditch, how do people get a hold of us if they need to?
So, phone number on 0635 77435, or email info@mtu.org.nz, or stop by the office and come see us at Hancock Community House between 10 and 3 on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Maybe 5 Friday if you've got an appointment.
Fantastic. Thank you all for listening. Carry on with the rest of your morning. Stay safe. Stay warm and dry. Thank you for listening.
All the best.
Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.